Hi, this is David Giard. We're talking again about Azure Mobile Services. In the last lesson, I showed you how to create a JavaScript-based Azure Mobile Service using the current portal. I'll bring that up now. Here I've gone to azure.microsoft.com, clicked on the portal, and it shows me all the items. If I come down here to Mobile Services, you'll see there's the mobile service that I created last time. I can open it up and view the dashboard and actually see the URL. In fact, I still have the URL open right there. It's https://gr.azure-mobile.net because I actually named this thing GR. What I'm going to do in this demonstration is I'm going to create a sample application that connects to a table and exposes a REST API to that table. And then I'm going to create a client application that connects to that. And the way I do that is I go to this lightning bolt page to get started. Actually, before I start there, let me just show you the data. There are no tables connected to this right now. I'm pointing to a database. I pointed to that when I actually started here, but I don't have a table that I'm pointed to. If I go to this lightning bolt page here, you notice that there's a I can select a platform: Windows, iOS, Android, HTML, JavaScript, Xamarin, or PhoneGap. These are the client applications that are supported out of the box that'll generate from the front end to the back end some sample code for you. This is possible because we're exposing a REST API, and REST is a standard. We're just going to send JSON to it, also a standard. So all these things support it. You could write your own as well in Python or Java or Ruby. Anything that speaks HTTPS and JSON will work with this. But this out of the box, it'll actually generate some sample code for you on these platforms. I'm going to select Windows because I have the client tools for that. And here to get started, there's three steps. Step one, I don't need to do because it's telling me I can download a free version of Visual Studio. Well, I already have Visual Studio on my computer, so I'll skip that step. Right here, I'm going to create a table. And this will create a sample table. It's the to-do item table. In this demo that is going to be created, the sample application, it's a list of tasks that I have to do today. And so the task, each task will have a description of that task, some text to describe what it is I have to do, and then a Boolean flag, true, false, to indicate whether that task is complete or not. So there, it's created the table. And actually, I can go over to the Data tab. And see, there's my table, to-do item. If I look at it, you'll see here on the Browse tab there's nothing to browse. There are no records right now. I can go to the Columns tab and see that the table was created. This empty table was created. It has an ID. You always want to have an ID when you're working with databases so you can find the row to update or delete. And then it has just some auditing columns here. Created that, updated that, version, deleted. These are used to manage concurrency. But it doesn't have the columns I talked about, the description, the text that describes what my task is, or some Boolean flag that says completed is true or false. Those aren't in here. And the reason those aren't in there is because they can be added dynamically. The way that Azure Mobile Services works is that you're going to send it a JSON object, and JSON is just a format of text to send objects in across the internet. You're going to send it an object, and that object will have properties, and Azure Mobile Services will look at those properties, and it will map the name of each property with the name of a column in the database. And if you have, for example, let's say a customer object, and it has a first name property, then Azure Mobile Service will look for a column called first name. It'll take the value of that first name property, and it'll insert it into the column, the first name column. So it'll do that automatically. And what happens if you provide an object with a property that doesn't have a corresponding column? By default, or if it, well, actually, it depends. Go over here to configure. If I have dynamic schema turned on, which is true by default when I create a brand new mobile service, this is turned on. If I have this turned on, then Azure Mobile Service will automatically create that column for me. So this is a really nice convenience when you're doing development. You can skip that step where you have to create the column ahead of time. Just send it some data with a property, and the column will be created for you. It's probably a good idea to turn this off once you publish production because you might ex unexpectedly get some extra columns. But it's a nice convenience thing during development. All right, so back to data. There's my one table, to-do item. No data. Those are the columns right now. Here is the scripts that I'm going to call. And this is, remember, this is a JavaScript function. This is all JavaScript. There are four functions: insert, update, delete, and read. And if I look at them, they all have exactly this one line of code: request.execute. And request.execute is just some mobile service JavaScript magic that takes a parameter and turns it into a SQL statement. So this item parameter, that's the JSON that's going to be sent to my mobile service across the internet. It's that JSON object, and that item will have properties, and this request.execute will look at that item, it'll look at my table, and it'll generate, in this case, a SQL insert statement. And if there's some columns that are missing, it may also generate a SQL alter table statement as well in order to add those columns. So you'll notice that the insert and the update, they have this item, that's the JSON object that can be sent. The delete, we only need to pass the ID. We just need to know which row to delete. And then with the read, we're not going to be sending data with the read. We're actually going to retrieve data, which will come back as JSON. But we do have this query parameter. With the query parameter, then we can modify the query that's going to run on the back end. This will get turned into a SQL select statement. We're going to modify that to do filtering or sorting or top end queries or things like that by modifying properties of this query object. Notice also the other parameters, user and request. Every single one of these methods has those two parameters. The user will only come into play if we turn on single sign-on. We turn on some kind of authentication. If we don't turn on authentication, if we don't force the users to log in, this will be null. And then the request object, that's just the HTTP request if we want to get some information out of that. So they all have that. And even though these only have one line of code, request.execute, these are editable. You can come in here and you can say, you know, just add a comment here. This is some other stuff. You can add your own business logic to each one of these independently and click down here and save that if you wanted to, which I won't do right now. All right, I'll bring you over here to the permissions, and you'll notice that the permissions by default are anybody with the application key. And look at the options here. Everyone, meaning no security at all. Anyone that, if you, as long as you know the URL, you can get to this this insert function. Anybody with the application key, that's the default. And what is that application key? Well, the application key is down here. Manage keys. This application key is this really long, several dozen numbers and letters that are combined together. So that is the application key. What that's saying is that in order to make this call, I must pass that key in the header of the HTTP request. The other options are only authenticated users. That would force any application to log on before making that request. You must apply a token with that. We'll talk in a later video about how to implement that. And then only scripts and admins, that's extremely secure. That says that you can only call this from the server or from the portal. So just as an example of this, here is the URL for the service as a whole. If I want to get to the URL of that table, I would say tables/to-do item. It's always URL of the service, followed by the word tables, followed by the name of the table. In this case, it's to-do item. And if I do this, then I should get an authentication error. I should get some kind of security error because I'm not supplying that application key by just typing this into the browser. It's right here. 401 is unauthorized. So I could do that. If I really wanted to do that, I could turn this off and say everyone can read this data, change the permissions of the read, and now I have no security on the read. So when that's done saving this here, now if I go back, I should be able to refresh this and actually get the data back. Now there is no data in this table, so it should be an empty set, but some JSON would come back and it'd be just empty here. Usually the first call is a little slower, and there it is, an empty set right there. All right, I actually don't like that. I'm going to force the application key here. All right, I promised some client code, and I'll show you how to generate the sample client code. And the way I do that is go back to this lightning bolt page, and I'm still on Windows, so I expand this new Windows or Windows Phone app, and down here I'm going to download and run your app. This will generate some sample client code. It'll be a Windows Universal app, so it'll contain both a Windows Store app and a Windows Phone app. It'll be Windows 8 as of this recording. That may change to Windows 10 at some point. And then if you've done any kind of Windows 8 or Windows Phone work, you know that you can write your code in C# and your presentation in XAML, or you can write your code in WinJS, which is a flavor of JavaScript, and your presentation layer in HTML5. You have that option. I'm going to use C# is mine right here. I'll open it up and I'll put it here in C:\test. Yeah, that sounds good right there. Oh, didn't like that. Let's try that again. Download right there, open it up, and I want to extract it. Extract all. This is probably what I meant to do. Put that into C:\test. Right here. And here it is. It's a Visual Studio solution. If I open this up, it'll open up in Visual Studio 2013. Here it's asking me, do you trust this? Because, you know, it came from the internet. And I say, yes, I trust it. How could you not trust something with so many kittens on it? So this will open up my Visual Studio 2013 solution, which will contain a couple of different projects in it. Here it's telling me that it's in Windows 8 app. Do you want to upgrade to Windows 8.1? I said, no, this is really just a sample app. I'm just having a little fun with it. And if I get out of full screen here, I should be able to see that over here in the Solution Explorer, I have a Windows 8.1 app, I have a Windows Phone 8.1 app, and I have a shared application. This is the way the universal apps work. I always do a rebuild on these because they do have some NuGet packages. I want to make sure that I refresh the latest versions of those packages, make sure everything works. And then I'll just run this thing just so you can see it. F5 to run it. And it's already installed in this team. Are you trying to get, yeah, sure, let's do it. I must have done this code before, this demo before. And here we are. This is the Windows 8 version of it. You can see here it's insert a to-do item over here. Over here is the list all the to-do items that are not yet complete. So I'll type in wake up. It's the first thing I have to do today. Click save. That's going to call that REST service and insert data. Over here you can see asynchronously we're calling it to refresh the data. Wake up, get out of bed, save, and then drag a comb across my head. Save. There we go. So these are, of course, the lyrics to a famous Beatles song. Oh, like an update. Click on that. This complete checkbox, true or false. Check that. It turns it false. And because this list is filtered by only the ones that are not complete, it refreshes that. So you can see it's implementing the insert, the read, and the update. Not the delete, but. Now, I didn't mention before that the endpoint, the URL of this service is gr-azuremobile.net/table/todoitem. That's the same endpoint whether I'm doing a create, read, update, or delete. The way that my service knows which operation I want to do is through something called an HTTP verb. So every time you make an HTTP request to a URI, you are always sending a verb along with it. And if I just type a verb, or I type a URL into the address bar here of a browser and enter, the verb I'm going to use is the get verb. So you're all familiar, you've all used the get verb before. Same thing if I click a hyperlink. The hyperlink has an href. We get directed to that href, and that request goes with the get verb. You're also probably familiar with a post verb. The post verb is what happens when I fill out a form online and click the submit button down at the bottom of that form. Usually what happens is that all the data on that form gets packaged up and it gets sent to some URL on the server, and usually it gets sent with the post verb. But many of you may not be familiar with the other verbs. There is a delete verb and a put verb and a patch verb, and those are also available, and you can write code to access those. And this is important because in REST, by convention, we use those verbs. If a GET request comes in, then by convention, we expect to get data, to read data. If a POST request comes in, a request with a POST verb, then by convention, we expect to insert data, to create new data. If a put or a patch verb is sent to a URL, then by convention we expect that the service will update some data on the back end. And if a delete verb is sent, then we expect, of course, to delete data. And the reason why there are two for update, there's both put and patch, is because the put verb we expect to send all of the data that's available on the back. So in this case, it'd be in a database table case, it would be all of the columns in that database table would be included in the JSON object that we send. Whereas in the patch verb, we would send only the data that's changed plus the ID. So that's the difference between the two. And this is the convention we use. Of course, we could write our own code and violate those conventions, but that's generally not a good idea because people use REST a lot and they are expecting those conventions to be in place. And if you deviate from them, you'll probably confuse your users. So it's a good idea to use those same things. And in fact, mobile services does in fact keep those conventions. So if you send a request to this URL and you send it with the post verb and you send some a JSON object with it, then it will attempt to insert data into the table. That's how it knows whether to send it to the insert function, insert JavaScript function. Now you don't have to. You could write code to create an HTTP request, change the header information, change the verb, and send all that. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there's actually tools in the .NET framework. There's an SDK that'll help you with that, and that's what's being used in this sample application. So if I look at the code in the sample application, when this application starts up, first thing that it does is it creates this mobile service client. And that mobile service client, it's going to be called mobile service. It'll be app.mobile service because it's an application-wide one. In the constructor, we're going to pass in the URL of our service and our application key. So this knows where the service is, it knows the application key, so it can send that with headers information. And we're going to use this repeatedly in our application. And then in our application, we're going to have it's only one form in this app. And the very first thing that happens when this form instantiates is that we use that app.mobile service to create a table where there's a mobile service has a get table method, and we're going to pass in this generic object here, to do item. To do item is our model. If I go to the definition of that, you'll see that is simply a .NET class, todoItem, and it has an ID, it has a text, and it has a Boolean complete flag. Just three properties right here. We've set some JSON properties just to make sure they're all lowercase, because that's JavaScript tends to be camel cased. But those three properties, that's going to be the JSON object going to send. It'll have an ID, text, and complete property, and that'll try to map to the ID, text, and complete properties in our backend table in SQL Server when Azure Mobile Services receives that object. So that's what happens here. And then in this, once we create this to-do table, that to-do table, because it came from app.mobile services, it knows the URL, it knows what data to expect, the to-do item table, and it knows about the application key because that was part of the mobile service. And it has methods. The to-do table has methods like insert async. Insert async, we're going to pass it a to-do item. That's the information we fill out on the form. And that is all that's going to do is it's going to call my REST service, and it's going to call it with the post verb, and it'll pass in the header, it'll pass in the application key, and in the body, it's going to pass in this JSON object with an ID, some text, and the complete flag. There's also, if I scroll down here, when you click that checkbox, the to-do table also has an update async. Again, we're going to pass an item in here, and there's no example on this to do a delete, but you can probably figure it out that if you want to delete something, there is to-do table.delete async as well. That's on here. You can do that as well. And then for the reads, so this update async, of course, it's going to call it with the put verb, and right here to do a read, we could just use a link, to-do table.where. So filter it to show me only those where complete equals false. And then here we're going to do to collection async that. We're going to convert that to a collection just so we can do some data binding on the screen and show it to the user. But all this abstracts away from us the necessity to actually create an HTTP request, set some properties on it. We can do it all through this SDK here, these .NET objects. Makes it a lot easier. Notice also the to-do item, it had a couple of extra properties that, like, an ID, of course, but it had a text and a complete here. And if we go back to our portal and now look at the data, we'll see those three rows that I inserted right here. Here are the three rows: wake up, get out of bed, drag a comb across my head. By default, complete was false, but I changed this one to true. And notice also, it now has a text column and a complete column, and that's because dynamic schema is turned on. It didn't find those columns, so it automatically created them. So all that plumbing was done for you, and all you have to do is to write your business logic code that's specific to your application. This is the big advantage of Azure Mobile Services. It frees you from writing this plumbing code. So in this lesson, we showed you how to create a sample application that has a backend table in mobile services and that generates some client code for Windows. Thanks for watching.